This podcast is sponsored by AAA, the American Automobile Association. AAA members get discounts on tickets, resort accommodations, and more at Walt Disney World and other Orlando attractions. If you book a qualifying Walt Disney World resort vacation package at select AAA offices, you'll receive a free subscription to touringplans.com and dedicated trip planning resources just for AAA clients. Go to AAA.com or ask your local AAA travel agent for more details on this offer. Welcome to another edition of the Unofficial Guide Disney Dish Podcast with Jim Hill. Today we're at Islands of Adventure theme park with Jim Hill. We've just entered the park, and welcome to all of you. Jim, how's it going today at IOA?
Oh, it's going great because, again, we're in, honestly, Universal's, or excuse me, yes, the most ambitious Universal park. And to be honest, in a lot of ways, it's the most ambitious park here in Orlando.
Really?
I mean, think about it. You know, we were just over in Universal Studios, which, again, is a film studio. And, you know, as a direct result, because they were going to shoot movies there, there's a lot of counterintuitive language. We're here, right from the get-go, Islands Adventure was supposed to be a theme park. So, you know, we are now in the retail quarter. This is their Main Street USA. But at the same time, it is one of the most densely packed storytelling Main Street USA as you'll ever see. That, you know, as you wander around here, for example, we have the jail over here. And if you're paying attention, you can actually see, you know, the ropes where prisoners snuck out, and you can hear the audio loop. but no, it's just, this is a port of entry, literally is what it says it is. It is, you know, we're surrounded by ride vehicles. Whether, you know, for example, looking at a bicycle cart here, we passed a rocket. You know, these are how all these adventurers came here to have.
So the ride vehicles represent the how the people who populate the park supposedly got here.
That's it, exactly.
Yeah, and the entrance of the park is interesting. On sort of the right hand side, you've got some like you've got different kinds of buildings from every different period of time in every different area. It looks like you've got steampunk stuff there on the right. You've got some really funny stuff over there on the left. It's all pretty interesting.
And all deliberate. All with the idea of giving you the sense of the world that lies just beyond port of entry here. But again, what I find fascinating is that as you walk into this park, you actually pass the great, you know, the great light, the lighthouse, one of the seven wonders of the world.
The lighthouse at Alexandria.
Yeah, but here's the funny thing that if you remember the initial concept art for Tokyo Disney Seas for Tokyo, that was the icon for that park.
Really?
And you know, again, in the fine tradition of, you know, great artists steal, you know, the folks at Universal, it's like, okay, that's a cool idea. All right, we're doing that too.
And that isn't the right vehicle.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It just, but
there's a sleigh.
Yep.
That's clever. This is a really well done sort of entryway. It feels kind of like a Middle Eastern bazaar meets, you know, sort of Mediterranean village.
But at the same time, now, look at, again, Universal Correct System 6. Remember how we were talking yesterday about you walk in past the camera shop? You know, they look across the way on the right side. There's your bakery.
Yes.
So you want your breakfast and you're right-handed. You know, that's where your vision is driven to.
So yeah, and on the right-hand side coming back, you've got your merchandise. So in many ways, it does reflect sort of the design sensibility of a regular Disney theme park.
And again, you know, now borrowing from two Disney theme parks, we walk out and see the lagoon from Epcot. But what's across the way? The castle. You know, Jurassic Park. Ah. The visitor center for Jurassic Park. And, of course, that's how it was originally designed. But now, what do you see when you come in? You know, it's kind of obscured by a tree, but there's Hogwarts Castle. And if we stand here for a moment, we will watch fully two-thirds of the guests make an immediate hard right as they head off to Harry Potter.
Yeah, we mentioned this on the way on the walkover from Universal Studios, but I would say fully out of every 100 guests that were coming out of the parking garage, 80 of them were going here to IOA, and only 20 of them were going to the studios. This is the park already. IOA already feels much more crowded than Universal Studios did.
And the irony again is, previously, anybody entering this park before Harry Potter was here made the left, because of course the first thing you see is the Hulk coaster.
The Hulk coaster, right, the big green thing with loops and stuff. It's a great coaster. Have you been on it?
Oh, yeah. Sadly, had to ride in the fat seat, but yes, I've ridden on it.
It's very smooth.
No, absolutely. It's amazingly smooth, though. One of my favorite... Good morning. One of the more interesting aspects of the attraction, and this had to be put in... They began soft opening of this in March of 1999, and a friend of here was working the bridge, and they had just fired up the Hulk coaster for the first time. He's standing there, and he suddenly hears smash, and there's a camera lying in the street next to him. And they realized, oh my God, because in that loop that they go into, you know, everything flies out of the car. So now they literally rigged up that net there to capture things. And at the end of the day, they go and collect them.
Really?
And so, you know, when your belongings fly out on a Hulk, there is actually a chance you can recover them. So,
You know what they should have in the park?
What?
A pawn shop. You can collect all the stuff. You need a Nikon? What kind of Nikon do you need?
Well, this is true. This is true.
All right, so we're walking under the Hulk coaster. We're starting it looks like a clockwise tour,
yep,
of the park, and we're coming up on some sort of futuristic space looking cafe.
Well, again, here we are with we're in Marvel Island, and if I'm not mistaken, that's, what is it, the Fantastic Four cafe?
Yeah, I'll go with that.
Well, and this is where life gets a little complicated, because, you know, again, this is a Marvel land and a Universal theme park, and Marvel now is, of course, owned by Disney. And so the question is always... Sorry about that.
Wow.
The question has always been, when's Disney going to get the theme park rights to the Marvel characters? And
right.
At least here in Florida, I don't know... Does the term hell freeze over, you know, mean anything? part of the problem is that the licensing deal, that the master licensing deals that Universal enjoys with Marvel are so specific. I mean, literally, you know, for example, we're walking by all these buildings now with giant versions of the characters on the marquees. There's a separate deal for each of these characters on the marquees, let alone the walk-around characters in the park, let alone the attractions.
Wow.
And all of them are very specific to the effect of, you know, Universal has the rights for 250 miles. You know, nobody else can have an attraction featuring these characters.
Within 250 miles.
And then beyond that, it gets a little interesting because there is some additional language. And trust me, Disney's attorneys have gone over and over and over this, and they've tried to negotiate some deals with Universal. And in fact, that's the interesting thing. Disney has cut deals with Universal before. I mean, think about it. They got Oswald the Lucky Rabbit back after 80 years. So
yeah.
There's a precedent. It can be done. And they're trying to do it through back channels quietly, but the first attempt failed so badly, Universal actually put money into redoing Spider-Man. In fact, that'll be opening in a month or two here as sort of a FU to Disney. It's like, you know, not only are we going to hang on to these characters, we're putting money back into the attractions.
So this is Marvel Island. We're walking past a comic store, a diner. I wonder if there's a Chris Eliopoulos in the Marvel stuff. We're walking past a diner, past a ice cream store. It's pretty well themed in sort of a... I could definitely see this as a Marvel city.
No, it's wonderfully done for what it is. But part of the problem for islands is they literally had to go out and find properties. In fact, we're now just reaching the outermost edges of Marvel Superhero Island, about to go to Toon Lagoon, and this is where the stitching really shows. I had a friend who actually worked on the construction of this. It literally was in the trailer. It was in the mud, you know, as they're building this thing. And literally, you know, your boss would come in and go, "We got Prince Valiant." It's like, really? You know,
really?
What, for pocket change that was on top of the dresser? You walk through here, and it's all of these comic book characters from the 60s and the 70s. And this is what they could get. And if you listen to the other podcast,
we've got Judge Parker Ride.
There you go. Yeah. Mary Worth. You know, they just did what they could. They do have the puppy ride, or listen, the Popeye ride. Right. And they do have the Dudley Do Right.
You mentioned that we've got the Broomhilda stand here. These are characters that you've seen before, but they're sort of like the stuff that Hanna-Barbera would show at 3 a.m. on Cartoon Network.
Absolutely, absolutely. And again, you walk through here, and it's like looking, we're getting into the depth of the land that is marquee after marquee after marquee. I mean, Brenda Starr. And again,
Blondie.
Yeah.
Although no, there is Bullwinkle and Rocky. I'll give them that.
Well, but that, again, another interesting story of how personal and frankly, kind of mean the battle between Disney and Universal was. If you remember back in the early 80s or thereabouts, Disney actually had the rights, VHS rights, to the Rocky and Bullwinkle show. And they had released 8 or 9 of them. And Disney was actually assuming that because they had this deal, that they began developing theme park attractions, because we have this wonderful working relationship with Jay Ward's daughter, Ramona. And, so they were planning on actually, and again, this is the 80s before Disney had, its animation revival with Aladdin, Beauty and the Beast. So they were scrambling for characters that, for example, to put into to Disney Hollywood Studios. And Universal, some canny lawyer at Universal is like, wait, they got the video rights, but not the theme park rights. And they swooped in and literally snagged them out from under Disney. And Disney was so pissed that they had plans for 20 and 30 VHSs in the Bullwinkle DVD series, and they shut it down. They just, after 8, it's like, that's it, we're done. We don't do anything else with you.
8.
Yep. And so, again, this is a very cutthroat personal business. And... but again, because they got the Jay Ward rights, that's where they got Dudley Do-Right from. So, but again, it's not, don't get me wrong, it's not that this is necessarily, it's got some charm, but it's an awfully cluttered design. And a lot of the time you're looking at it like, do I know that character? I'm looking at Pogo. I know Pogo.
Yeah, Pogo, we got the Phantom, Buddy, Betty Boop, Kathy, Heathcliff.
So... But, they gave it a shot. And to be fair, they're iconic characters. I mean, here we've got, Little Nemo, Windsor McKay.
Yeah.
There is some good stuff here. And
oh, God, there is Family Circus.
There you go.
I was joking. It's true.
And what's killer, though, is leading away from the Family Circus is they little have the dot. You can chase Billy.
So on the Sunday strips of Family Circus.
There you go.
Sometimes they'll do a dotted strip where they show what Billy did, for like take out the trash. And they'll show him going through the entire neighborhood, take out the trash. They do one of those.
Don't get me wrong. There are clever ideas. You have your water fountain with, cartoon strip dog known to man. There are some fun ideas here, but it's kind of cluttered. It's kind of busy. But
there are definitely a lot of water features here. It feels cooler because of the water features.
Well, that's...
The Dagwood sandwich.
This is actually... And they will serve it to you here. You actually can get a Dagwood sandwich.
Really?
Yep.
What's in it?
Everything. Furniture.
Furniture. Do they have it on the list? I'd love to see what the ingredients are in the Dagwood sandwich. Let's take a look. We're going to go in and see if there's a... Let's see if there's an ingredient. Oh, yeah, there is. It's $8.99. All right. Our famous Dagwood sandwich. First baked onion and poppy seed bread piled high with baked ham, turkey, roast beef, American and Swiss cheese, topped with lettuce, tomatoes, mayonnaise, and mustard. Wow. That's a sandwich. That's pretty impressive.
I'm sorry. If it doesn't come with a complimentary Metamucil, I'm not having it.
there's not enough fiber in that one.
There we go. It comes with a complimentary wicker chair to eat.
Yeah.
So... Anyway, now, this is... You talked about the water features. One of the reasons there's so much water in this land, because this... Again, this is the park where you get wet. You have, Popeye and Bluto's, Bill Trav, Ratfuck.
Right.
And then just beyond that is Jurassic Park. And you don't just get wet on these things. It's literally... You could go swimming and be drier.
Yeah, I've been on them, and you get... Dudley Do-Right, there's no way around getting completely soaked.
No, absolutely. And don't get me wrong, it's a quality ride. It's done well. It certainly you know, you compare this to Cali River Rapids, where it's just, you know, that somebody can, you know, swat you with a wet sponge. But they have a wonderful, do you want to go and take a look? Or okay. A wonderful kid play area. And again, that coupled with a just flat out terrific view across the water at Hogwarts. So,
okay.
But again, you know, the sad thing is that anybody who rides Popeye isn't necessarily rewriting Popeye.
No. Once you've done it, you're good.
Okay, I'm soaked for the week, thank you.
So the ride vehicles for Popeye look a lot like the ride vehicles for Cali River Rapids. It's a similar type of ride, but I don't think on the same scale.
Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I mean, look, we're as busy as the park is today, it's a 5-minute wait.
Yeah, and it's warm outside.
Yeah, so what does that tell you? You know? But at the same time, we have the Wimpy's Burgers over here, and that's, again, staying, you know, consistent to, you know, the characters of the storyline, you know, coupled with our Popeye-themed water play, or, you know, climbing area play area here.
Sweet Pea's climbing area?
Yeah, they do some nice stuff. And again, there's some great design back here.
we're walking past a group of people who are just completely drenched, and they're taking their clothes off and wringing them out. And frankly, some of them shouldn't be shirtless. But anyway.
Let's go and find something nicer to look at, all right?
I think I'm blind now, Jim. I think I'm blind. And we're walking up towards the Olive, which is, I guess, like a boat play area for kids.
Mm-hmm. No, and again, great climbing, great playing. But again, you know, think about it. If you've been out to Disneyland and been to, you know, the Miss Daisy, you know, compare that to, you know, to this, you know, three-story structure.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, we're walking over the bridge that is the Popeye attraction, and we're walking past a tugboat scene that is just dumping water all over one half of the rafts in the Popeye ride. I'm not talking about like a spritz. It looks like the waterfall on Jungle Cruise. It's that much water. Oh, that's incredible. And we're walking up now, so we're kind of elevated right now. We're kind of up about one story. Have a great view of the Hulk, a great view of the other parts of the park. Jim, what's that land straight across?
Well, again, we're looking at Marvel. In fact, we're looking at the footings for the Hope Coaster. And then as we come over here, we've got Seuss's Landing.
Seuss's Landing, okay.
And then Mythos.
Mythos. Is that a restaurant?
Yes, but that's, and again, this is where things get interesting. This is supposedly the best reviewed theme park restaurant in all of Orlando. And I've always had a little trouble with that story because it's like, it's never opens. How can it be the best reviewed when any time I ever go by it, it's closed? You know, I mean, just the five people get in there, rave. You know,
so. That's it. It's like Victorian Albert's, that's why. It must be one of those.
Ah, got it. Okay.
But for burgers.
So, but anyway, now you can see just, you know, sort of the tail of Hogwarts Village.
And, you know, okay, so we're looking Mythos to the left of Mythos is Hogwarts Village.
And Plymouth Rock! Oh my god!
Oh wow, I thought it was farther north.
It's shaped like a Plymouth. That's funny. Okay. The cruiser up might be a little quieter.
Okay. We're about 200 yards away from the Hulk coaster, which tells you how loud that thing is. If you can hear it in the background.
But as we stand here, you can see kind of one of the problems with this park. So much of it. I mean, look over at Seuss's Landing.
Mm-hmm.
All right, the vibrant colors. But it means when you commit to Seuss's world, you commit to Seuss's world. You know, in fact, we're watching their little train thing work. That was an opening day attraction that never made it off the table. That was supposed to be Gerald Monkey McBean's, you know, amazing train machine.
Right.
Never quite worked the way it was supposed to. So this is what they were finally able to sort of jury-rig it into working.
But so it's an elevated, slow-moving train ride. Mm-hmm. through Seuss's Land, it looks like. Yeah, but you're right. In terms of visual contrast, going from sort of right to left, we've got the green of the Hulk coaster. We've got the Mediterranean sort of look of the end of the entryway. We've got Seuss's Landing, which is all sort of Technicolor, odd-shaped structures. You've got a roller coaster in the back that's Rip Ride.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Then you got Mythos, which is, it looks like it's carved out of rock. And then you've got Hogwarts. You've really got, you know what we're missing here is the Chrysler building, because that would be every type of architecture you could possibly do.
Well, again, the irony here is if they had actually gone ahead with the Tooniversal project, right there was where Gotham City was going to be built, and Marvel was going to be Metropolis. And in fact, what was kind of interesting is the lagoon, how they're going to close the park out every night.
Mm-hmm.
Was they're going to do this massive lagoon show. In fact, the path we're on was where guests were going to go to stand to see it. But literally, the idea was that elements from all four islands would come out and form a brand new island that would only come out at night. And, you know, for example, sailing out of Gotham City would be an iceberg that had been created by Mr. Freeze. You know, and it would have been an amazing nighttime show, but never quite, you know, again, they did make that deal. Though, interestingly enough, one of the only reasons that Universal got Harry Potter was because of Seuss.
Really?
Well, interesting thing that you know, Disney had the first shot at J.K. Rowling, and they designed two attractions. There was a Defense Against the Dark Arts ride, and then there was going to be, if you can believe it, a care and feeding of magical creatures petting zoo. You know,
wow.
And okay. But it was only these two attractions. It was only going to be, Disney was going back and forth about whether it was going to be in Fantasyland at the Magic Kingdom or they're going to build it at the studio.
Right.
And they basically, they totally mishandled J.K. Rowling. But long story short, this is a woman who was very hands-on, who, you know, in a weird sort of way, Disney should have known better, because it was like, it took them 15 years to convince P.L. Travers to give Walt Disney himself the rights to Mary Poppins. So, you know, and Travers was a pushover compared to J.K. Rowling. But they basically told her, look, honey, you know, we're Disney. We're the very best at what we do. When we want your input, we'll ask for it. And the negotiations just crashed and burned. And meanwhile, Universal gets wind of you know, the fact that she's on the market again. And they're so smart about it. They contact her and literally it's like, look, Miss Rowling, we understand you. You know, the theme park rights are available, and we'd be so honored if you'd be part of our you know, and we'd love to work with you. In fact, we'd consult you on every phase of the park. And so they fly her out here. And they walk her over to Seuss's Landing and say, look, you know the Dr. Seuss stories. Look at how carefully we sculpted the characters. Look how lovingly we maintain these buildings. You know, we followed exactly what Geisel did. And better yet, here's Audrey Geisel, you know, Dr. Seuss's widow. Give her a call. Tell her, you know, ask her, you know, how it was to work with Universal. And Audrey was a huge pain in the ass. Audrey, you know, when they were opening this park back in 99, she's walking around going, that's the wrong color, paint it. And they painted it.
And they redid it?
And that was the thing that said, look, I was really, really demanding. I put these guys through hell. And they did it. They did exactly what I want. I have no complaint at all about Universal. And if you're thinking of bringing Harry Potter there, big thumbs up. Go with those guys. And that's what happened. She decided to sign because of Seuss's Landing. So,
well, that's a great story.
Yeah. So, anyway, speaking of Potter, if we can walk for another 3 hours, we'll get there.
I haven't been to this park in years, so it's completely lost as we're right. We're walking back towards Jurassic Park, is that it?
Well, we're sort of skirting the water here. I'm trying to figure out if we can actually get back out to Dudley Do-Right here.
We may have to swim for it, Jim.
Well, it's another little, kind of fascinating story of Universal history, because Dudley was supposed to be the attraction that opened the spring after the park opened. It was deliberately held in reserve.
Okay. Oh, for something else to do?
And they're 4 months out from opening, and they announce, you know, we're going to need it. Is that... All right. I think we go down here and around.
All right.
And the problem is, we're not ready. So...
Oh, that's a dead end. Huh.
Okay.
And apparently we're meeting up with other people who are stuck in the den. I think we have to go back up that way.
Okay. All right. I'm following you at this point. Anyway.
and they were never heard from again. Let this podcast be a recording of our last thoughts on Earth.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, back to I didn't look like it went anywhere.
Let me check. Hold on. There's an area over here. Let me look. No. Nope, that's nothing. Dead end. Does anybody have any food?
D7, miss!
Jim's playing Battleship. Oh, that'd be funny.
Anyway.
That's what we need. A theme park based on board games.
Do not give them any ideas. I mean, remember, Battleship the movie is actually opening this year.
Is it really?
Oh, yes. Yes. Seriously.
What? There's a plot?
Aliens. And in fact, what's fascinating is that when the aliens actually attack the battleship, they fire what look like big white plastic pegs into the side of the ship.
Oh, that's beautiful.
So
if you're a literalist when playing the game, you'll be completely happy.
There you go. Anyway, back to Dudley. Again, so they have 4 months, and they get it open. But it's like, look, we have show scenes that aren't done. It's like, I don't care. And they're still not done.
They're still not done.
Still not done.
15 years later.
Yeah, it was one of these things where it's like, we're going to have to get back to that at some time. And they never have. So,
wow.
Now, you've ridden Dudley at some point, right?
Oh, yeah. I got okay. soaked on it.
Okay. So, but you remember the Pirates of the Caribbean gag at the end?
No, I don't remember it.
Well, the last scene before you get to the offload area is Snidely Whiplash, you know, in jail, literally aping the scene from Pirates of the Caribbean.
With the dog?
Only, in this case, it's a beaver holding the set of keys. So.
That's great.
So.
I think we can go up and to the right to
I
get
think
to,
that makes sense.
To Jurassic Park.
So. Anyway, pushing on. I don't know. It just, I remember from Angela, my friend who actually worked this project, just the poor thing being out here in this mud field. This was literally the last land to get done because they didn't know from day to day who they'd land the rights for.
Which characters they'd land.
Yeah, and it's just sort of like, okay, and let's hurry and get that facade built. So,
wow. All right, so we're walking over, we're leaving the land of cartoons, and we're heading over towards Jurassic Park.
And again, this was when this place opened. This was their castle. This was what was supposed to drive you ever deeper into this park. And some of this stuff works back here, and some of it does not. I mean, for example, we're working at Pterodon Flyers right now.
Right.
And a wonderful attraction if you weigh 3 pounds.
Yeah.
You
know? It's got height requirements that that prevent lots and lots and lots of people of riding it, right?
Absolutely. And coupled with the fact that it's got virtually zero capacity. Charming idea, you know, just, you know, when it came time to actually build the thing, just never quite came together the way it was supposed to. Anyway, here we come up on Ripsaw Falls, which has the wonderful exploding building effect. So, here we go.
Yeah, and so we're passing by Ripsaw Falls. It's on our left. It's got a sort of a Splash Mountain-y type feel to it. There's tons and tons of water just pouring out of the rapids, actually, Ripsaw Falls, I guess. And as each ride vehicle goes down, water can shoot out and spray everywhere. It's just a ton of water. It's a great effect, though. Visually, it's very interesting.
Absolutely. But again, it just would have been interesting if it had been built as designed and, more to the point, finished. So, but I'm funny that way, you know?
A completist.
So.
Oh, we're coming up on Jurassic, the entry to Jurassic Park. It's got the sort of the big doors from the movie. It's the Pterodon Flyers look like it's a relatively straightforward attraction, a hanging sort of coaster for kids.
Though that said, one of the nicest things about the success of Harry Potter was that because they were suddenly dealing with that many more people in the park, they actually brought back their Triceratops Encounter attraction here. Have you ever done that?
No.
Oh. It's this incredibly sophisticated, basically it's the guys in Canada who did the robotic space arm for the shuttle.
Yeah.
And what they did is they built an audio animatronic Triceratops that you literally go into the barn, and you know there's a trainer there who's, you know, hi, you have a 4 and 5 minute encounter with an animal that doesn't exist. It's,
wow.
It's really, really clever. And but they actually shut it down because, circling back to our Tomorrowland story, the entrance path was so obscure that people, you know, didn't know what to do.
We're now walking through the Jurassic Parkland. So one of the interesting things I like about the entrance here, Jim, is just like the Animal Kingdom, they've themed the walkway. So it's got plant imprints on it, like, you know, fossils and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And the plants themselves on either side are representative of, you know, earlier time when, you know, so ferns, you know, simpler plants and things like that.
No, absolutely. Though, you know, the flip side of this is this comes at a cost, that if you're in a wheelchair or you're an ADA vehicle, it makes the pavement that much rougher. But, you know, so it's always a balancing act when you're talking with ops. Never mind the fact that these are harder to maintain because, you know, you not only have to paint the pavement, but you have to paint in a little shadow to sell the idea that, oh, that's a fraud or that's a footprint or, you know.
Nice.
Speaking of nice, though, that the Camp Jurassic here, the kiddie play area,
right,
is, I think, again, among the best in Orlando. That the only thing, as an adult, if you take your child in there, you can lose them for days.
Really?
I mean, just, you know, I remember coming here with EJ and Jonathan White and just, you know, two small boys who, I think we were here for 2 hours, and then eventually it's like, look, you know, all right, let another family adopt you. We've waited long enough.
We can't find you. That's it. Wow. So that was a boat that just came out of the Jurassic Park ride. That is a tremendous amount of water.
Absolutely. There. Absolutely. But that's the interesting thing is people here like to do the water triathlon. They will do this, then they'll go over and do Dudley, and then they'll build Dredd, and then they'll dribble throughout the rest of the park.
Wow.
So
It's a good way of Universal to irrigate the rest of the park by moisture wicking from the guests.
Yeah, because of course, you know, in Florida they have that they need more humidity. You know,
yeah, just, that's it. Yeah,
you know, just this is a place that just, you know, it's not damp enough. You know,
it needs to be. It's so arid normally that that we need more moisture. We're walking past one of those fans that blow mist, the missing fans. And that's a little bit of a.
But yeah, so
noise.
And I think Camp Jurassic, one entrance, so at least, you know, you have a half a chance of actually getting your children back.
You can play Zone.
There we go. There we go. So.
That's good. And so there's a, so the Jurassic Parkland has a restaurant, it has a gift shop, of course, and it's got three attractions, if you include the camp, right?
Absolutely. And, but again, remember the Triceratops thing, and actually there's an expansion pad that they have yet to use back here.
Really? Behind the Outfitters?
Yep.
Huh.
And this is actually for a Jurassic Park Jeep attraction that they have. They've had it designed now for 15 years. They're ready to go. But it takes the thing from the movie that everybody saw, the riding in the ride vehicle, and something goes horribly wrong.
Right.
But, you know, who knows that. Maybe someday. I know that there is talk at Universal about doing a fourth Jurassic Park film. In fact, maybe rebooting the series. And perhaps as part of that, they'll finally take that idea out of, you know, out of hock, so to speak.
Huh.
So.
We're walking now towards through the back end of Jurassic Park. We're coming up on, I guess there's a place to get temporary tattoos, pizza. You know, the interesting thing, though, still, I mean, we're... The view leaving the Jurassic Park isn't terrible. You've got the sort of Hogwarts castle looming in the distance, but this pizza place, it's the theme fits in.
Yep.
With the land, it's really not bad. They've got sort of kind of a show building that's, I guess the Hogwarts show building, which is pretty big. But overall, they've done pretty well with the sight lines.
No, and again, the only problem is that, in fact, this is why we're seeing. You know, when Hogwarts bumps out, it's going to go down the hill toward Sinbad, let alone what they're doing over at Universal Studios Florida. It's just, this is as far as they can go in this direction.
This is as far as Hogwarts can go without taking out the Jurassic Park stuff.
And, you know, the sad part of it is that they were hoping that they'd actually be able to do here the dining experience. They give people... you know, a meal in the Great Hall, and they're still circling around on that idea.
Would they have to expand out this way?
Well, that's the problem.
So you'd really only have to take out, I mean, I don't know what sort of support buildings are behind here, but you've got restrooms, you've got a pizza place, you've got room to do it.
Well, the problem is that as they want to do the Great Hall, first of all, people, you know, when you're going to pay $60, $70, $80 for that sort of character dining, which is what we're talking about, they're going to want to at least think that they're going into Hogwarts Castle. So you have to build it in this area, and you have to figure out how to load people in.
Right.
More to the point, though, it's got to be built. The Great Hall itself has to be built on the second floor because the kitchens have to be below. There's an effect they've got planned for the show that's absolutely killer.
What is it?
Well, basically, you know, again, if you know from the Harry Potter films, the feast starts with the food magically appearing. So people who are dining at the Great Hall are going to want to see the food magically appear. So, and they figured out how to do it. And it's actually a really clever idea that what they'll do is that, you know, you'll sit at long common tables and there'll be what appears to be an empty silver platter in front of you. And then the wait staff will walk in with the top of a tureen, which they show you without showing you that it's empty. There is nothing in it. It's light. They're sort of spinning. And they put it down on the table, and on a five count, they lift it. And it's filled with food. It's steaming hot, you know, chicken and beef. And it's like, and everyone's like, wow, how did you do that? Well, how they do that is that, again, kitchen below. And they put the food on a hydraulic ram. And the platter in front of you, it literally is like a drawer. It slides out of place, food comes up, and the food is there. The couple of tests they've done, it's really good with chicken. It's great with beef. Not so much with the mashed potatoes. Well, that's exactly. You lift up the top of the tureen and you scoop out the mashed potatoes. But they'll figure it out. But that's what they wanted, you know, because again, that the survey work, you know, that was literally one of the top three. The people who came to Harry Potter, they love what they have here, but they want to ride the Gingrich's Coaster, they want to ride Hogwarts, and they want to eat in the Great Hall. And so it's like two of those they figured out, and now it's just finding space for the third.
That's a great idea.
That's good.
Oh, absolutely. That's a good segue. So we're about to enter Harry Potter land here.
We're
still going. Sorry.
No, this is the visitor center here.
I will totally edit this out so it doesn't make me sound like I don't know what I'm talking about. And by totally edit out, I mean let's keep it in because that's what happened.
And this, again, I guess it's closed for the season now, but this is where the Triceratops attraction is located. I guess now it's open on a seasonal basis, which is a shame. It's great fun. Actually see the gate through there.
See the queue.
So, but anyway, again, this is your castle. This is what's supposed to drive you deep into the park. But, you know, if you do hear a complaint about islands, it's that the walkways are very, very, very twisty.
It is,
You know, but again, you want to give that sense of more space than there actually is here. Because that's the other problem with this park is that given how massive so many of these attractions are, you need giant show buildings. I mean, if you're out driving on Sand Lake Road, you can see the size of, you know, the Jurassic Park River Ride building. It's huge,
right.
You know. It's like the tiny version of the Vehicle Assembly Building at NASA.
I think they have tons of room for expansion here. I mean, we're walking past sort of the Discovery the Dinosaur and the Discovery Center. That didn't look like that populated to me.
But
so
here's the problem. Okay, Universal owns Jurassic Park. They don't have to pay any. Well, all right, they have to pay Michael Crichton's estate.
Okay.
And Random House. Okay, but everything else they own. Whereas with Harry Potter, everything is a negotiation. You know, you got to go back to J.K. In fact, you know, take for example that this, you know, one of the reasons they haven't officially announced what they're doing over in, you know, USF is that, you know, they still haven't got her to completely sign on board with it.
Really?
So it's like, you know, you're going to agree to do this. Yeah, in principle. It's like, well, could you sign a contract? Well, in principle. It's like,
in theory, I could sign a contract. All right, we're leaving Jurassic Park. We're about to go over the bridge to, I guess this is Harry Potterland. All right, this is a good place to stop. We'll pick up again in a minute. All right, Jim, we're getting ready to walk into the Dr. Seuss Land. What's the... Oh, Seuss Landing.
And again, just for those of you who are purists, yes, we cheated. All right? We were in Jurassic Park. We are now, you know, at Seuss Landing.
Magically in Seuss Landing. We and through the magic of editing, we may splice all this together to appear seamless.
Ah, there we go.
All right.
Mistake. Okay. This is, again, this is the land where Universal really, really, really tried to show... You know, this is their equivalent of Fantasyland and what they could do. And the fact that it's such a great physical representation of Geisel's books doesn't necessarily mean that it was all successful. I mean, for example, we're standing across from the long-shuttered Green Eggs and Ham Shop, which, you know, again, a great idea on paper because they did it authentically.
Did they actually sold Green Eggs and
they
Ham?
They sold Green Eggs and Ham.
Really?
It was eggs with green food coloring and... That, you know, people would get in line and go, oh, this is wonderful, this is cool, and I'm not eating this. And so, you know, they were, you know, trash cans full of this just right off to the side where people would take one bite and then throw it away because, you know, green eggs and ham.
And the ham was green too?
Well, no, the ham was actually the right color, but, you know, green eggs. So, anyway, we have, oh, cool. I'm sorry, you just missed it, that Universal has feral cats.
Feral cats.
No, seriously. One just ran out of... In fact, ironic. Jim, if I ran the zoo, ran out of, you know...
The feral cat ran out of the... the zoo exhibit.
If you'll notice that we have a Universal employee with a net trying to catch the feral cat.
With really big gloves. Like the kind of gloves that if you were blowing glass, then you needed to stick your hands in an oven. Those are the kind of gloves the man has on.
He went that away.
Jim is directioning in the way the cat went.
Okay. Anyway, no, but it's kind of ironic they're trying to catch it because Disney, at least in California, actually cultivates its feral cats because, of course, they keep the rodent population down, you know, which is kind of ironic. Again, Mickey Mouse, but we'll get into that later.
We're walking past another carousel.
Which, again, for you Disney collectibles fan, a lot of the authentic Seuss animals for the carousel were actually sculpted by Maggie Parr, who the Imagineer who, you know, worked for years on, you know, sadly, projects that didn't get made for Disney, like Beastly Kingdom for Disney's Animal Kingdom.
Right.
But, you know, she now mostly makes her living painting wonderful Disney paintings that recreate settings from the parks and put the characters in them, but... One of her earlier gigs after she left Disney was doing this carousel. So
nice. We're walking past the Cat in the Hat ride now. What does that look like, Jim?
Well, to be honest, it's a dark ride that is very well done, but could have benefited from a little less spinning.
Really?
In fact, that's one of the complaints that parents make a lot about this ride, is that their kids would love it, except for the fact that every so often, the vehicles really whip around,
right,
and sort of freak out the kids. So,
that's a shame.
So,
and then we're passing one fish, two fish, red fish, blue fish, which is essentially Dumbo. It's a spinner
Dumbo
ride.
Dumbo, when you get spat, well, you know, it's actually closer to the magic carpet to Aladdin because you do get spat on in this thing.
That's right. There's a water feature where the fish spit on you during the ride.
But again, they did such a nice job when it comes to sculpting, you know, the Seuss characters, and just taking the world of the books and making it three-dimensional. But the interesting thing is the backdoor component of this is that because they had this working relationship now with Audrey Geisel, that then allowed them to make movies like The Grinch, which we won't talk about, and just opening this week, in fact, The Lorax.
Oh, and we're walking by the Truffula trees right now, and The Lorax was behind us. The Truffula trees here are a little bit faded.
Yeah, well, that... And again, this is part of the problem with committing to something like this, that because the colors and the stylization in the Seuss books are so distinct... You know, a painting crew basically starts at one end of this thing, you know, finishes, and then goes right back. Because, you know, this is Central Florida, that colors get burned out immediately. And
you can tell, actually, where they're at right now. So they're not quite at the Lorax yet, but they've definitely completed the Dr. Seuss All the Books You Can Read store. Because those colors are really, really vibrant.
Absolutely, and as we get deeper in here, I mean, just the Gertrude McFuzz you know, I mean, this part of it pops, but
it's hysterical though. The difference, because I mean, that's a great green right there.
Yeah. And but again, come back in 3 months and it'll be faded. You know, just these sorts of colors just can't, you know, just can't deal with the harsh Florida sun, Central Florida sun. So, but again, to be fair, they have committed to doing it right. And now, again, you know, everybody knows about Hidden Mickeys. You know, what I love about Seuss's Landing is we actually have a hidden Dr. Seuss.
We have a hidden Dr. Seuss in Seuss's
Landing. Over here.
All right, we're over by the police car.
Mulberry Street. If you see the police car, there's a band full of three dignitaries. You know, look at the one on the far left.
That's Theodore Geisel.
Could also be Bob Salinger. I'm not entirely sure on that.
I'm going with Geisel.
Okay, but again, they do a nice, nice job. So,
that's great. We're passing the Mulberry Street store, the Gizmos Gadgets and Goodies Galore.
And it's nice to see they got the you know, the train attraction finally going through. This was an opening day thing that never quite got out of the box. It took them 4 and 5 years to finally get something up and running.
Wow. It's an elevated train ride around Seuss's Landing. So, I like the name of the store, Goose Juice.
I think around the corner we actually have Moose Juice.
Goose Juice and Moose Juice?
Well, come on. Gotta read your Dr. Seuss. So, hey.
And we're walking over the bridge. So we're at the end of the Seuss Landing. We're at the bridge to go to Harry Potter Land. Shall we go in, Jim?
Dun, waiting for the Road of Huns.
There's a throng of people. Yeah. It's amazingly popular. I mean, especially this section, too.
But here's the... Here's the sad part. This part of the park has some of the very best design from the early iteration. And so much of it has already disappeared for the Wizarding World of Harry Potter. And if the plans are true, you know, the remaining parts of this will probably go under the knife in the next 4 or 5 years.
Really?
The only thing that supposedly hands off is Mythos. And even then, there's talk of, you know, would this be that much more popular as a Harry Potter-themed restaurant. I mean, face it, you can't really go wrong at Universal these days when it comes... If you put Harry Potter something, you know, people will get online for it.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it's right now, they have... the demand exceeds supply, and they're just looking for ways to bump that out. So, I mean, take, for example, here, where we're walking up on the edge of Poseidon's Fury. One of the concepts that has been kicked around is using this theater, this facility, for a Chamber of Secrets show. Second Harry Potter book, you know, the notion is that you would go into this space and, you know, to be deep under, you know, the hills of Hogwarts and, you know, come face to face with a basilisk. So, but again, it's a shame because this has, if you look at, you know, I love the cat, you know, the statue that fell in itself. I mean, here you have Poseidon's head, his foot, his arm. I mean, there's so much great detail, great work here.
Yeah.
That, but again, you have to, this is the second iteration of this show because, you know, the first version, people were like, the show's called Poseidon's Fury. Where is Poseidon?
No.
You know, they had to literally change it out to create a new version that heavily featured Poseidon.
Wow. So this is continuing of the Seven Wonders of the World, right? So out front was the lighthouse at Alexandria. Another one of the Seven Wonders of the Ancient World was it Poseidon sitting astride the harbor at... and then it was destroyed in an earthquake. So that's interesting. That's an interesting theme. Are there any other wonders in the...
I think, you see, the problem is that was a design idea that they were married to initially, but continued to fall away. And, you know, it's a shame. But again, I love these giant chunks of the statue. I just
barely. That's really well done. You see the feet.
Yeah.
So standing astride the entrance to the theater. Mm-hmm. That really is thinking. Actually, it's pretty clever.
There's some wonderful storytelling in this park, and sadly, the story is coming to an end relatively soon to make way for more Potter. So.
Get some background music back here. It's nice.
Mm-hmm. And again, just fun little retail shops, but of course, who buy, you know.
No one's buying Poseidon merchandise these days.
There you go. It's like, in fact, you're walking by somebody reading a Harry Potter book. It's just. All right. Okay.
Just some notes. They're studying before they ride the ride, right, just to make sure.
I want to make sure I get.
There's a quiz at the end, I hear.
So anyway, if what they're saying is true, that what'll happen in phase three of Potter, because phase two, of course, is the Diagon Alley project for Universal Studios Florida. You're now going to bump out the borders of Hogsmeade Village, and this is going to be basically the hillside that the students walk down to go to the Hogwarts Express, and there will be pretty much approximately, and they where Sinbad is right now,
right,
a train station that will run back and forth between the two parks, and in fact, the disaster attraction over there will be redressed as White. Is it Whitechapel? Oh, no, King's Cross Station. And, you know, that's where, you know, you back and forth. You'll, you know, ride from, you know, one Harry Potter experience to the other.
So you go from, you'll get on the train, you'll go to one park, you'll get off the train, you'll be in another park, then you get back on the train to come back to your original park?
Yes, that's it exactly. Though, but again, they're hoping that you do, in fact, wander out away from Harry Potter at some point.
Oh, that you don't just get off the train and get back on?
And here's the sad part. We're going to lose fun little, I mean, now mind you, the fountain didn't used to play music like this, but this is the interactive fountain there where the you know, there's a play off stage watching through a camera who's busy assaulting children via water.
So we're out in front of Eighth Voyage of Sinbad, and there's a water fountain that's normally just sort of a relatively calm fountain, you know, that the water stays inside the area that it's supposed to. But then apparently it occasionally erupts and sprays water.
This poor child is about to get nailed.
20 feet across. The one disconcerting thing that Jim mentioned is that there were the background music that was playing while the fountain was going off was Cypress Hill's "Insane in the Membrane," not exactly true to form. For I've seen the Sinbad movie. The maybe there was in the stop motion one that I didn't see entirely all the way through.
Moving on.
now that song is gonna be in our heads for the rest of the rest of the day.
So, but again, it's just that if you, to be honest, so you look around us that this isn't going to be an area that necessarily is going to be missed. I mean, we're in a gaming section. It's
no.
designed, it's themed.
No, and as much money as the games make, they probably make more with Potter.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. But, you know, as we walk up to the gates of Hogsmeade Village, just picture this going 300 feet further back there.
Frankly, I mean, looking at it, I'm surprised they haven't done it already.
Well, because you have to close it to do it. And it's like, you're going to turn off the money machine?
Yeah.
But again, one of the things they hope to address while doing this is the issue with the Dragon Challenge coaster. When this was the Ice Dragon, the Fire Dragon, back when it was Lost Continent,
right.
This is one of the most popular attractions in the entire park. You know, they would have epic lines. And now it does less than a third of the fourth of the business. But again, it comes back to a theme that we've talked about before. I mean, come on over, take a look.
All right, we're over in Harry Potter Land. We've just passed the Hogwarts Express train. We're passing by Hogsmeade Station. We've got Honeydukes on our left. We've got these amazing butterbeer carts. It's really like walking into Grand Central Station, you know, on New Year's Eve. There's just people everywhere, all around. It's the middle of the day. It's really, really warm. Excuse me. Go ahead. All right. Kids running underfoot. It's hysterical.
That's it. As busy as it is, notice how few people are actually going to Dragon Challenge. It's because it's this little modest recessed door.
There's a 5-minute wait right now for Dragon Challenge. So we're in the busiest land busiest of the Universal theme parks, and there's a Harry Potter themed attraction for which there's a 5-minute wait.
And the amazing thing is, if you go up the hill here, there's wonderful props. It's and in fact, that's the other thing to understand about the Wizarding World of Harry Potter. It's a very specific time. This is set in the fourth book, the fourth film. You're literally in the middle of the Triwizard Tournament. So it's, you know, so you are in the world of Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire on the day of the Dragon Challenge, before things start to go south. So it's still a relatively happy time in the Potter universe. And so, and that's literally where they've frozen the characters. But, and in fact, you go up the hill here and here are all of the banner, the handmade banners by the Hogwarts students for their heroes. And In fact, as smart as they've been with all of the propping here is you actually go in top of the hill. There is a Goblet of Fire.
Really?
But you go into the next room, there are these wonderful, amazing $50,000 worth of tapestries that Universal had made in Hungary that are, you know, depict the great wizards of the past watching the tournament. However, they are in the room with the candles dangling down. And in order to sell the candle effect, they had to turn down the light. So literally, if you want to see some amazing tapestry, bring your camera with a flash, all right? And when you're in that space, wait till other guests pass through and take a couple of shots. So when you go home, look at the wonderful tapestries because you can't see them here.
Wow. Just look at the city.
Sure.
So we're walking past one of the Butterbeer carts, and I'm going to count the number of people in line. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8... 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26, 27, 28, 29, 30, 31, 32, 33, 34, 35, 36, 37, 38, 39, 40, 41, 42. There's like 50 people in line for Butterbeer.
It's in a lot of ways, it's the biggest attraction here, more, and certainly it's the most profitable. I mean, when you think about, you know, it's not exactly in Coca-Cola country as in, you know, Coca-Cola is what? 8 ounces of water and, you know, 3 pennies worth of syrup. But it's a relatively short list of ingredients, relatively cheap to make, and they're making money hand over fist.
Oh, that's great.
Anyway,
so what's the structure right here that we're standing on? Sort of like a...
This is, if you know your Harry Potter stories,
Okay.
All messages travel by owl, the owl post. And so what you're seeing here is literally, you know, the owlry. This is where all, and in fact, what I love about their attention to detail is we have plastic owls in here that's heads that swivel. But again, assuming that they're real owls, there's owl poop under each of the...
There is.
You know, just... But again, the idea was to make this as lived in... You know, I mean, literally, the idea is you walked into the books, you walked into the movies. And the only problem with that is that... and this really only becomes an issue during the summer months, but because this area is almost all black and gray stone, it doesn't just hold the heat. It's an easy bake oven. And, there's a reason that people are looking for beverages, because they're dying here, you know. There is honestly so much. We could do an entire podcast just about this land. There is so much attention to detail. Whether it's, you know, the snowy roofs of Hogsmeade Village, or the individual windows of each of the stores that, you know, for example, where you buy your Quidditch equipment, there's a snitch flying around in the window.
Yeah.
Or, you know, it's just so much, but the only problem right now is this is so hugely popular, it's almost impossible to move in here. It just, you know...
That's very crowded. I wouldn't want to bring a stroller in here.
Well, and that's the thing. In fact, at certain times of the year, it's a one-way traffic only. You come in one side, and they direct you out the other.
Wow.
You know, they cut off access through Jurassic Park area.
What's that straight ahead, Jim?
That is the Three Broomsticks, along with the Hogshead Tavern. In fact, let us duck in there and get you a beverage.
A beverage, you say? All right, we'll walk over there and see what we can do about a beverage. I'm intrigued. You guys hear the background music? So this is a bar, gift shop, drink shop, place where we file taxes. We're going into the Hogshead. Apparently some sort of refreshment stand. Dun, 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 dun. We'll see how long the line is for whatever it is that we're doing. Ah, it's a bar. Oh, it is.
Now, I was actually here for the grand opening of the Wizarding World. And, didn't do this deliberately. I was the first one off with a press bus. They had a red carpet set up. And I ended up, it was raining, it was covered with plastic. And some Universal employee shooed me off of it. And I finally wound up. See, my prom date found work. I was the only reporter let in to the Wizarding World for 90 minutes and had the place basically to myself. And so ended up, you know, going from store to store, interviewing people, and got some amazing information about, you know, for example, the typical guest when they got into the Harry Potter stores, you know, during the soft opening, they were spending $175 a person.
Wow.
On robes and on average, and they were talking about, there had been some families, one family that came over from Britain that spent $1,500. They had to have one of everything. And anyway, so I end up here in the Hogshead Tavern, frantically taking notes, and I'm really not paying attention to what's going on around me. And they had decided to bring in 30 to 50 Universal employees and dress them as wizards for the press event. And this became the facility that they held them in. I look up and I am now in the movie, all right? Because yeah, they're all sitting here waiting. And it's like, oh, geez, you know, it's literally my brain. It's like, one of these things is not like the other. So I got to get out of here. So I'm trying to discreetly get out of the room, and I must have stepped on the back of 30 different cloaks because it was like, it's like, ow, 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 ow.
Sorry.
So I end up back in the Three Broomsticks portion, which is now empty. And I'm sitting there, and there's this English family, you know, just sort of sitting alone, and I grab the other table and sit down. And eventually become aware of the conversation. And it's like, well, do you think Her Majesty is coming out this evening? It's like, well, she has to. She's been working with them all week. And it's like, I eventually realize it's J.K. Rowling's family that had flown over for the event. And they proceed to talk about how the poor woman had been out in the park after hours with literally, I mean, her attention to detail here was almost insane. She was walking around talking about correcting the moss on the side of the building here.
Of course.
Doesn't
I had a different species in mind.
Yeah, no, it's just, you know, it would have been here longer, so it needs to be a little larger here, and this is damp, and it just, it was fascinating, you know, and again, it's just one of these things where you're sitting listening and trying not to, I'm really not a creepy eavesdropper, you know, I have to be in the area hearing this conversation, but again, I love this facility, but the other thing is, think about it. You just talked about 50 people being in line.
In line for a beverage.
Okay. We just walked into this place. We are now, what, fifth in line?
Yeah. So a quick tip is if you actually want the butterbeer, it's faster to go into the Hogshead Tavern?
Yes.
Hogshead.
It's alone for the audio animatronic Hogshead behind the bar that periodically comes to life.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. It's a pretty large Hogshead.
So what are you going to do? You're going to do Frozen, or you're going to, how about one of each? That way you can. Okay.
Right. You're buying the butterbeer?
I'll buy the butterbeer.
Jim's buying the butterbeer, folks. All right, I'm excited here. This line is, actually, this is fairly detailed. Is there upstairs seating? Is that what those stairs are for, or is that a prop?
No. In fact, we'll step into the deeper part of the bar here, but with its.
Oh, it goes way back.
Yep. In fact, what's fascinating is if you actually go into the... again, this is a geeky little touch. But go into the Three Broomsticks and look up. This is Florida. They need air conditioning. They need ductwork. You can't see it. All right? They've literally put a full ceiling in of a tavern, you know, in the Harry Potter world. And then all the ductwork is above that, hidden away. I mean...
It's genius.
Yeah, absolutely. So... So we're doing one of each.
One Frozen and one regular. Okay. Fabulous. All right, folks, we're going to pause this for a second until we get our butterbeer, and then we'll be back. All right, so we're taking a break inside the Hogshead Brewery. We've got Jim's buying the drinks. Thank you, Jim. Interesting. All right, so we've got two drinks here. We've got the frozen version, and then we've got the liquid version. So on the non-frozen version, it looks like this bubbling marshmallows.
Well, no, the interesting thing is the head is added at the end.
The head is added at the end.
It's done. It's literally the finishing touch. There's a separate station where they add it almost like they whip cream on a cake.
That's what it looks like. That's hard to describe. It looks like it's wet bubbles. All right, here we go. It's not bad. It's like cream soda, butterscotch, and something really sweet. Sweeter, even. And then Laurel's making the yucky face.
It's been a while.
All right, I'm going to try the frozen version now.
Here, give it a shot.
It's almost like a mocha, the cream version. It's a different flavor from it.
Maybe they need to chain the hog head.
I can get used to the frozen versions. The cold really helps it a lot.
The downside of this is, as Nancy pointed out at lunch today, it's a fast lane to a brain freeze.
Oh, yeah. I can already feel it.
Yeah. So.
Oh, that's really good. Thank you, Jim.
But it's almost worth it alone, rather than to pay cash to do this at a credit card, because they literally hand you a quill.
Do they really?
Yes. So it's like, oh, well, you have to sign your card. It's you know. So, no, I...
Here's your inkwell.
There you go. No, there's... again, I think the storytelling, particularly here in the Three Broomsticks Hogshead, is so well done. And what's fascinating, though, is that at the opening, I got to chat with Stuart Craig, and he said the problem was that we had done three movies that featured scenes in, you know, the Hogshead and the Three Broomsticks, and each time we had changed the look of it, you know, coupled with what it said in the book, and, you know, of what the layout of this place was like. And so it was literally trying to take all of these elements and give it a unified view, while at the same time making it a restaurant that worked at a theme park.
That complied with, like, you know, fire regulation.
But at the same time, just across the way here at the Three Broomsticks, that's authentic English fare. I mean, you know, you can get scotch eggs, you can, you know, bangers and mash, fish and chips. And what's particularly fun about it is that their menu board is done in the style of the wanted posters from the movies. So, you know, where you saw Sirius Black screaming, that it's that large woodblock kind of print with images that fade out. But again, the detail, the dedication to bringing the world of the books and the movies to life here is just kind of stunning. And it now, you know, that's where kind of the gauntlet has been thrown down for Disney. It's going to be interesting, you know, between Cars Land in California, coupled with Fantasyland Forest, as to whether or not, you know, Disney can reclaim the high ground when it comes to, you know, themed entertainment. So
it's going to be difficult for them to reach this level of detail in Fantasyland, because they probably started this a couple of years ago. I don't know if they aspire to this level of detail. The room that we're in is, what, 3-4 stories tall?
Yep.
And it's detailed from the ground all the way up to the very top of the ceiling.
Mm-hmm. I mean, just look across the way at the dining room. You have all of these mismatched chairs.
Yep.
Because, again, this is a tavern. This is, you know, a place where people just come to eat, and it's, you know, got to service a lot of people. But, no, again, they've done such a nice job. And to Disney's credit, it's going to be interesting to see what happens when Be Our Guest opens. Because that is going to be...
That's going to be the direct comparison here.
That's it, exactly. But when you know, you can dine in the West Wing, when you can dine in the Grand Ballroom, or you can literally dine in the Be Our Guest dining room with, you know, the giant tables and all that. That's going to be fascinating. The one thing I was hearing about that, though, is they have been having trouble with the Living Character Initiative figures that they wanted to do that. If you remember the early concept paintings for it, you would actually see sort of tea trays being pushed through, and on each of these, there was an audio animatronic Lumiere, there was a Mrs. Potts and Chip, and it's like, it's one thing to do Remy the Rat when he's 6 inches tall and really doesn't have to say anything. Like, me, 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 and he's done. It's quite another thing to figure out who's backstage doing the Jerry Orbach impression. You know, hello! You know, so... but I don't know. Again, the only complaint you can make about Harry Potter is that literally it's the Wizarding World is too popular. That
it's not big enough.
It's not big enough, and that's kind of a good problem to have. But yeah, the legitimate Universal internally fought about this, about how big is too big, and you know, when it came down to it, it's like, well, obviously we have to do the ride right. In fact, that's where we're headed next, do you think? Or?
Yeah, just one last thing on this. One of the things that's amazing to me about the architecture of the
tavern is obviously it's a modern restaurant. Mm-hmm. It meets fire code. It meets all the health and safety. Yeah. But you don't see like a giant air conditioning turret at the top, do you?
No, absolutely. And in fact, that's really one of the wonders of this complex. You can look up and it looks like an authentic 16th century tavern, but the ductwork, the electrical, you know, again, this is air conditioned right here. It's all here. You just can't see it. You know.
Amazing. They've hidden it all very, very well.
Yeah, just tremendous, tremendous.
And I've been in taverns in England, and this is pretty darn close. I mean,
I would imagine you're not going to get the same response from asking for butterbeer, though. No, I will tell you this much. While I was at the bar, there's this interesting conversation. Again, this lovely suburban woman comes up, and she's negotiating that she and her family want 6 butterbeers and a real beer, and they want an empty glass. Because they want to pour Amstel Light into a glass with butterbeer and see what it tastes like. And I've never seen the Universal employee was so trying to talk her out of it so hard. It's like, you don't understand. This will all separate. All right. The alcohol will mix with this and you'll have glop. And, you know, and in fact, I don't know what it will form, but I wouldn't drink it.
There's a small chance of potential explosion.
But, you know, she was determined and she was walking off with her empty cup and her Amstel and all of her children with their butterbeer. So, you know, watch the news tonight, folks. There could be a really ugly story.
I would love to know how they make this. We're going to have to do a... Mm-hmm. All right, should we go ride the ride?
Sure.
Right. See you guys in a minute.
We've just ridden Forbidden Journey with Harry Potter. It's a remarkable attraction. It's got an incredible amount of detail in the queue. The ride itself is fantastic. You're on a Kuka arm that goes along a track, and you're swinging from scene to scene. I thought it was going to be all CGI, Jim, but a lot of it is actual sets that they've established. But the interesting thing is, going through the queue, you realize that there's so much detail in there. It's going to be really interesting to see how Disney responds to that.
No, absolutely. And in fact, again, Cars Land Radiator Springs Racer is supposedly Disney's response. And don't get me wrong, they're wonderful characters. But again, it's 2 films versus 7 books and 8 movies. And, you know, and in fact, that's the thing I think that was so smart about this is getting the actual cast to film this before, right. You know, they got to work on, you know, the last of the Half-Blood Prince. And it's, you know, between the audio and the visuals, and it's just, and mixing back and forth from the film to the practical sets, and it's the new gold standard for a themed attraction.
It really is you're walking through the queue, and it's not just static rooms you're going through. There are things to interact with in virtually every room. There's films, or there's paintings that come alive, there's lighting, there's rich detail everywhere.
And I say this as a fat guy, and remember that the big worry and the big problem with this attraction initially was that they had, that people of a certain heft couldn't ride. And a few months in, what they very bright thing, they took the 2 outside seats and made them fat friendly. And now, again, it's just a question of, yes, you get on board the ride and it's like, again, suck it in, fatty, but basically anybody can ride.
It's really good. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what Disney does in response to this. I can't imagine how Beast Castle or anything in the new Fantasyland is going to be as detailed as this, but I'm really excited to see it. It's going to be really good. Any last thoughts, Jim, before we close this episode?
Expecto Patronus. Okay, there we go.
All right, well, thank you guys for listening to the podcast. We'll be back with more really, really soon. Don't forget to leave comments on iTunes and rate the show, please. If you like it, we'll do more. If you don't like it, we'll probably do even more than that. Talk to you guys later. Thanks. Bye.
Stupid Judy, stupid energy.
This has been a production of Mouse World Radio.
This podcast is sponsored by AAA, the American Automobile Association. AAA members get discounts on tickets, resort accommodations, and more at Walt Disney World and other Orlando attractions. If you book a qualifying Walt Disney World resort vacation package at select AAA offices, you'll receive a free subscription to touringplans.com and dedicated trip planning resources just for AAA clients. Go to AAA.com or ask your local AAA travel agent for more details on this offer.